Mr. Chief Justice, it pleases the court.
And they were all males, with a male judge talking to the jury, and what they were talking about is how diapers work.
This is Life of the Law. I'm Nancy Mullane. We're all looking for the next best thing. The newest toothbrush, cell phone, light bulb. Whatever makes our lives a little bit better. And companies that make these next best things will do whatever it takes to prove they made it first and best, even if it means going to court to prove it. Audrey Quinn found this amazing story about one court battle that wouldn't quit.
Velcro closure, just like the Huggies did.
Think about the parts of a disposable diaper for a minute. You've got the sturdy fabric outside, you've got the puffy fabric on the inside, maybe some sticky tabs to hold it all together. Doesn't seem like rocket science. But watch a few diaper videos on YouTube and you'll realize things are more complicated.
I know a lot of people prefer Huggies, but I prefer Pampers, and I'll tell you why now. First, let me show you.
Hours and hours of parents staring into their computer screens, arguing the merits of Huggies versus Pampers.
I'm telling you, I am so, so very upset with Pampers.
If you want to save some money, then I guess go with Huggies. But if you don't want to clean up messes...
just to let all of you know, Pampers are so much better for newborns. And
what gets me about these videos is that they're so different from other YouTube brand debates. Sure, there are even more videos about McDonald's versus Burger King, or Coke versus Pepsi. But no one pleads so earnestly into the camera while explaining why one brand's French fries taste better than others. No one pauses mid-sentence to soothe their crying baby or explain why their wife's not around, while boasting about their favorite soda.
It has a side elastic and a side flap.
If you're a parent, diapers are the only thing that stands between your baby's bowel movements and, well, everything you own. You'll probably spend at least $1,000 on them, per kid. All around the world, that's about $40 billion spent a year on diapers. And diaper companies know this. The makers of Huggies and Pampers, the two biggest brands, they want those dollars. And they don't want to have to compete with each other to get them. Which is why, in the 1980s and 90s, they tried to litigate each other out of existence in a patent battle known as the Diaper Wars.
It's a 150-year-old term to refer to these things as wars.
Adam Mossoff's a professor of law at George Mason University School of Law. He's also a patent historian. He says today we talk a lot about the smartphone wars, the battle between Apple and Android. But that's just the latest.
In fact, there was a patent war over the telephone, over electrical distribution systems, over radio, over airplanes, over television, over the laser. The diaper wars is another one that I mentioned.
Mossoff says the diaper wars show that even products we take for granted involve massive technological innovation, innovation that companies are willing to spend millions to defend. To do it, they use a legal framework that's barely changed for centuries. Patent laws. Diapers might seem like an odd source of a patent battle, like what kind of technology are we talking about here? But remember those earnest parents?
The last feature that Pampers has, that
they need their diapers to work. And the way they work is through some surprisingly complicated technology. Back in the 1960s, Procter & Gamble, the maker of Pampers, pretty much owned the disposable diaper market.
Where are you off to?
Oh, I'll be back. I just have to put Kenny's diapers to soak.
You still washing diapers?
Well, they don't wash themselves.
We use Pampers.
I watched about a dozen of these black and white ads, and it was clear. Diapers automatically meant this lousy cloth thing, and Pampers were just synonymous with the disposable version. Which they were. Like how the brand name Polaroid just automatically means instant camera. For nearly two decades, if you were a North American parent burnt out on washing poo-covered pieces of cloth, you probably went out and bought Pampers. Until Huggies came along.
My recollection is in the early 80s, Kimberly-Clark came on the scene, in a fairly big way with the Huggies product. I'm John Sweeney. I'm a patent attorney.
Sweeney represented Procter & Gamble, the big guys in the diaper wars.
And Huggies was sort of the number two firm, but gaining market share on Procter & Gamble. My name is Bill Baumgartner, and I was one of the lawyers for Kimberly-Clark.
You're going to hear a lot about these two companies and their two brands, so here's a trick. Pampers. The brand that starts with a P comes from Procter & Gamble, the company that starts with a P. Huggies come from Kimberly-Clark. Maybe Procter & Gamble could have tried to just out-advertise Kimberly-Clark when Huggies came along, get the better of them that way. But remember, Procter & Gamble thinks Pampers are disposable diapers. So if Kimberly-Clark's now selling a disposable diaper, Huggies? The assumption was they were using their Pampers technology to steal Pampers customers. And Procter & Gamble had patents on that technology. So Procter & Gamble took Kimberly-Clark to court to charge them with patent infringement, one diaper patent at a time. And Kimberly-Clark responded in pretty much the same way.
Well, it was Procter & Gamble and Kimberly-Clark going at each other to get their piece of the pie in the disposable diaper market. My name is David Allen, and I am a patent lawyer who represented Kimberly-Clark in the diaper wars.
If you didn't catch that Ottawa accent, Allen was actually on the Canadian Council for Kimberly-Clark. This was an international undertaking. But he sat in on the American trials, too. And every single diaper patent was fair game for litigation. Up first, in 1985, elastic waistbands. This ad aired about a year before the first trial.
It's the diaper game, and we're here with our current champion. The first question, who has new elastic waistbands? Right, Huggies diapers!
Procter & Gamble was saying to Kimberly-Clark, you can't boast about Huggies' great elastic waistbands. That was our invention. You have no right to it. The case went before a jury.
Yeah, that's just like Perry Mason.
I counted about five lawyers on each side managing this case.
These are Kimberly-Clark lawyers Bill Baumgartner and David Allen again.
And they were all males, with a male judge talking to the jury. And what they were talking about is how diapers work.
How elastic waistbands stop pee leakage. How important this is to parents.
It was a pretty amusing situation.
But not a trivial one. Kimberly-Clark was afraid their Huggies diapers would go the way of the Kodak instant camera. There's a reason we call instant cameras Polaroids. Kodak, the number two brand in the instant camera market, didn't make it. They lost a Polaroid in a patent infringement case. And in the diaper wars, there was a chance here that if Procter & Gamble won, they'd go back to being the only big dog in the fight. Pampers would mean disposable diaper forever. Here's Kimberly-Clark lawyer Bill Baumgartner.
Well, we were staying at the same hotel, and the Procter & Gamble lawyers went out to dinner in a limousine every night. We usually had takeout food in our office.
But they got the last laugh. The jury ruled that Procter & Gamble did not, in fact, have sole rights to the elastic waistband patent.
After the jury verdict, we rode to the airport in their limousine.
But Procter & Gamble just came back with another patent infringement case.
This was their business strategy to use patent litigation to try to drive Kimberly-Clark out of the business. And so they failed the first time, and they were going to try again.
And the war went on from there. To understand how things got here to this multi-million-dollar argument over the containment of baby waste, it helps to understand a little more about patent litigation.
Usually what's most interesting about these cases is that the litigation is not usually about just the specifics of the technology itself.
That's patent historian Adam Mossoff again. The first patent law we know of was in 15th century Venice. Before patents, inventors had to be super stealthy, otherwise people could just steal their ideas and make money off them. Patents helped protect their inventions, so they could share them publicly without fear of getting scooped. But the role of patents changed in the 1850s, thanks to the sewing machine wars. Isaac Singer was selling the first really practical commercial sewing machine, a total hit. And he had come up with a few key features, but a good part of his sewing machine's design piggybacked off of other people's inventions.
Things like having a sewing machine on a horizontal table as opposed to placing it vertically, which is what some of the early sewing machines were designed to do.
Moss off again.
Having the combination of a needle with a second shuttle carrying a second thread to create what's called a lock stitch. Things that we look at today and say, oh, well, of course.
Other sewing machine makers went after Singer with patent infringement suits. No one was saying they owned all the rights to sewing machine technology. They were just attacking Singer, and later each other, one patent at a time, trying the death by a thousand cuts approach to try to bring down their rivals. This really opened the door for the use of patents as tools of competition. When all else fails, companies cry patent infringement to try to stay at the top of a market. Back in the diaper wars, by now it's 1990, 5 years into the war.
The problem of BM leakage had increased in importance because doctors were placing a new emphasis on breastfeeding, and breastfed babies apparently tend to have explosive runny BMs.
That's Procter & Gamble lawyer John Sweeney reading one of the court documents. This particular trial concerned protection against these explosive, runny BMs. Both companies were putting in a new kind of diaper crotch barrier. Here's Pampers advertising theirs.
These new Ultra Pampers have two extra leak barriers to help stop the wet leaks and block the messy leaks.
Kimberly Clark argued they had patented the special diaper crotch first with their Huggies diapers.
So we had our expert perform what is called an incline plane test.
That's Procter & Gamble lawyer John Sweeney again.
Where the fabric would be put on an inclined plane at, I think, about 30 degrees or 45 degrees. And then we would allow synthetic urine to hit the material and see if it penetrated the fabric or whether it all rolled off.
This was a urine demonstration for a court.
Well, they wouldn't use those words. They tried to use more metaphorical terms.
This is Kimberly Clark lawyer David Aylin.
And they would say, like, insulting the diaper or...
Insulting the diaper?
Yes.
And the cases went on from there. For every case tried in the U.S., there was also a Canadian trial, sometimes also a Mexican trial. Dozens more lawyers talking euphemistically about urine. The diaper wars finally came to an end in 1992. The company settled an antitrust case out of court. In the meantime, though, off-brands had sprung up, using the leading brand's technology. So when Kimberly Clark and Procter & Gamble stopped fighting each other, they got to work litigating the other guys out of business. The top generic brand went into bankruptcy 6 years later. And today, Kimberly Clark and Procter & Gamble are still at the top of the disposable diaper market. Was it worth it? I sat down with Adam Mossoff, the patent historian, to talk about that. I met him in his office, which was complete with a life-size Captain Kirk cutout and a growing collection of Supreme Court Justice bobblehead dolls.
I'm a geek. I admit it. In fact, in a certain sense, you have to be a geek to do what I do in patent law.
Mossoff says at the end of the day, he thinks it was the consumers that won the diaper wars.
You know why?
That sounds too easy.
Why does that sound too easy? Because that's typically who always wins the wars.
But to enjoy these benefits, we foot the bill for sometimes decades of litigation. And Mossoff says that's just part of the cost of innovation. Ultimately, we, the consumers, are the ones getting the better sewing machine, the better smartphone, the better diaper.
We end up actually paying less for the products and services that come from the new technology, even in paying in those products and services for the various costs that go into making them. Lawyers are part of this process throughout everything. In fact, it's somewhat of an unfortunate assumption that people think of lawyers or other types of costs of getting something as completely unnecessary.
Yeah, that makes me think that I'm okay with the price I'm paying for a product going towards R&D, but the idea of the price I'm paying for a product also contributing to the company's legal fees for some reason doesn't sit as well with me.
But they're very much intertwined with each other. A company is not going to spend billions of dollars in research and development if they don't have also the ability to say to other companies in the marketplace or other individuals, you have to pay me to use my property.
Just for a lark, I asked some parents how they've seen disposable diapers progress at a Target store in Brooklyn, and the reactions were mixed. Donald Cummings was buying diapers for his grandchild, his daughter's baby.
Do they look different from when she was a baby?
Looks the same weight like to me. I can't really tell much difference in it.
But Nicole Peterkin sees a clear improvement.
Yeah, definitely.
How so?
more absorbent. They're more absorbent than what they used to be.
Lorraine Lambert says she really just cares how they work now, and she says diapers these days, they still leak. But she figures gradual improvement is just a given for any technology. Take computers.
Yeah, some technology is still, you know, crashing. Some of them still get viruses, so it's going to take some time.
And maybe even more than just time, it's going to take some more patent battles. John Sweeney, the lawyer who represented Procter & Gamble in the diaper wars, actually still represents the company today. I asked him if this could happen again. Could we get Diaper Wars 2.0?
I think it's possible.
By which he means he might have a case.
So there's one I'm working on now, but I can't disclose the name of the other party, I'm sorry to say. From the lawyer's perspective, of course, we're hoping it turns into a very intense, another 5-year war or something, but I don't know if the companies really want to do that.
For Life of the Law, I'm Audrey Quinn.
Audrey Quinn worked with Casey Miner, who edited the story. Pat Walters is our senior editor. Zach Hirsch designed the sound. Caitlin Prest is our senior producer. Howard Gelman was our engineer. Our music was created by Kyle Kaplan, Todd McDonald, and Matthew Darr. We're distributed by the Infinite Guests Network of podcasts and supported by the Open Society Foundation, the Law and Society Association, the Proteus Fund, and by you. Visit us at lifeofthelaw.org. I'm Nancy Mullane.
Hi, I'm Amy Choi.
And I'm Rebecca Lair, and we are the Mashup Americans.
The Mashup Americans. Think of us as your guide to the hyphen America world we live in. Are you first-generation Korean-American, married to a Colombian-Mexican-American, and making beige babies? Us too.
Or do you speak three languages and eat Salvadoran pupusas at Shabbat? Is Spanglish your best language? That's me.
Spanglish is definitely your best language.
Yeah, it was kind of a problem in graduate school.
Don't worry about it. We're done with that. So we've got a new show here on the awesome Infinite Guest Network. You can go search for Mashup Americans in your favorite podcast app and check it out. We've got a great story about the mashup life of Donald Trump.
Oh, and I just went to Margaret Cho's house to Netflix and chill. Kind of.
Oh, my God. Vamos, let's do this.
As we like.